All right, everyone, another episode here, Sports and Stripes. Wade and Steven here. Just starting as we got to sort of pre-podcast talk, we started going over that woeful, wonderful NFL weekend, the conference championship or divisional championship last weekend. We had some amazing scores. The Atlanta game was not so good. I mean, let's go into it, because I'm still coming down from it. You know, I think that Saturday was, there were sort of shit games. Yeah. And it was crazy at the Hippodrome. We had people there till 5 in the morning, just absolutely packed. I actually left at 4, and then Scott Hansen showed up, but I guess at like 4, he was there from like 4 to 5.
Yeah, I know. I was going to ask you if you managed to bump into Scott Hansen, because I saw that obviously he came by. But for me, I remember all of the good about Sunday, and trying to rewind to go back to what Saturday was like. I mean, the Falcons-Eagles game was, if the Falcons could just have got their offense going, they could have won this game. For me, they missed so many big chances to win this game at Philadelphia. Philadelphia were quite happy to keep this nice little trench battle.
Yeah.
You know, we'll move the ball on the ground. You know, we'll let our defense do the rest. And that's what they managed to do. And for me, Atlanta missed a massive opportunity to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta didn't seem like they were actually fully focused on this game. And I think that there was, you know, the defense was really tight. They were very stingy Philadelphia defense. You said it was doing all the work for it. I just found this to be a boring football game. I was just one of those. I'm like, oh, whoever's going through this is not going through.
You know? I agree with you. I mean, the thing is as well is that, you know, they wanted Foles to play with himself. That's what he does best.
Yeah.
And I mean, he made a horrific play that should have been intercepted, that then turned into a 20-yard completion.
Yeah.
You know, just like, oh, is it going to be one of those days? Philadelphia's offensive line, I thought that's where they won this game.
Yeah.
Their offensive line were phenomenal. And if they can do that against Minnesota, which we'll get into in a bit, then it's going to be a really interesting game. But say Atlanta, if they'd have just, I think, you know, maybe grabbed the game by the throat and gone for that defense, they maybe should have won this game. I was a bit annoyed. I came away thinking, poor game, all-star game, which I didn't really enjoy. And then sitting there going, have Atlanta now maybe missed another opportunity of getting back to the big game? And I think that's where we're left with it in this one.
Yeah, I mean, it was also, Nick Foles was a story of two halves. I mean, the first half, he was atrocious. Second half, he was able to pull some drives together. You know, he actually was completing. There was a lot of errant passes, I noticed a lot of bounces, lucky bounces this weekend in the NFL. Nothing to obviously do with that, the Pittsburgh game. But this game, I just sort of, you know, aside from the fact that I was sitting with an Atlanta fan who was so livid, and the Philly fans were very excited about this, and I mean, I think their excitement will only last weekend. It was just one of those sort of nothing games, and I mean, you know, Philadelphia obviously having home field advantage, which really did help them, I think, you know, being in the cold. I think Minnesota will, you know, they are a northern team, but they're a dome team. I think they'll struggle. But it was just, to me, that was, you know, sort of one of the crappy just games of the weekend.
Yeah, it was, and I think I've always had it that the team that goes to the Super Bowl in the NFC comes in the other half of the bracket. I had the winner of the Saints Panthers, Saints Vikings game, and I still think the Vikings, that kind of line that goes through that particular half of the playoffs, I think that's where we're headed. Philadelphia, for me, again, I go back to, they don't really impress me. I mean, obviously, like Carson Wentz going down was a huge loss for them, but can I really sit here and believe that Nick Foles can lead a team into the Super Bowl? Could be one of the worst quarterbacks we've ever had in the Super Bowl. You know?
He's no Trent Dilfer.
That's like the one name that comes up.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, Trent Dilfer's like the answer to the trivia question in that one. But yeah, Nick Foles could
be. Rex Grossman. Don't forget Rex Grossman.
No, this is it. I think a lot of us forget that. Even Bears fans would like to forget
that. Yeah, no. I mean, I was so excited about that Super Bowl. Oh my gosh, we scored a touchdown first. We're going to win. Fuck. But so let's move on. I mean, the next game, obviously, we knew this one was going to be a blowout. We knew that New England, I mean, Tennessee, they got the lead first, you know. But that was about it. I mean, you know, I was sort of going on about how Gronk was going to stop this one. And Gronk was a big beast in this game. But, you know, they just hammered the crap out of them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have bought into, didn't they, like the Patriots slump over the last month of the regular season. You know, can they turn it on come playoff time? You know, what are the real Patriots we're seeing right now? You know, Brady's this, Brady's that. Not going to be able to move the ball and all of that. And I think for me, one thing the Titans did wrong was actually scoring first, because
yeah.
they immediately got the Pats like, okay, we're just going to stomp them now.
Yeah, and no, here we go. Yeah, there we go.
21 points in the second quarter, and that's where it was. They just completely blew them away, and at that point, you couldn't see any way for Tennessee to come back. I stand by what I've said about the last 6 weeks of the season. Tennessee aren't a playoff team.
No.
They got into the playoffs. They got through the wild card round. They were never going to get past the divisional round, and it's no surprise to me, might as well bring it up now, that Malarkey's lost his job.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he, for me, knew that he was on borrowed time, and, you know, whatever round he got put out in, I think he was going to lose his job anyway. Not a great football team. I think the interesting thing is now is what we think about the Patriots going forward, what they can do, because I think they kind of showed a blueprint of what they were going to do. They're going to move the ball, not necessarily on the ground, but they're going to do these little short passes like they always do.
Yeah.
They go Grant, they go Amendola in the slot. That is their blueprint, and I think it's a very good blueprint for this weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, it gives Brady enough time. It also, when you're preparing for some of these really tough defenses, which they're now going to start having to face, that, you know, particularly with the Jacksonville team, that you have to dump that ball up and get it going. Because they're, you know, it's the one thing that Jacksonville doesn't do as well as protect against tight ends, but... This, yeah, they basically, and I was one of those things where I was sort of watching it, and I was like, fuck it, I left the hippo, I came home, and then next thing you know, you sort of pass, it's like, next thing you know, it's like, oh, fuck, this is over. But, I mean, you know, we knew that there was to be a thumping. I'm glad that I predict the exact spread to exact on, but it was just sort of one of those games where you just, like, you wake up, and, you know, New England's fans are like herpes, they just start growing more and more, and then there's more of them, and everyone's like, I'm a Patriots fan! And fuck them. But yeah, so then the next game, obviously, it's one of the Sunday games, Jacksonville-Pittsburgh, 87 points in this game. I actually was on, I think I'll probably take the under in this one. It'll be Pittsburgh, it'll be cold. Didn't think that I would see this sort of, I mean, you know, Blake Bortles, he was more accurate. He's still not great. He was more accurate. But I think the most important thing is that Pittsburgh defense allowing 45 points.
This is it. I mean, that's the first thing I'll take away from this game is, you know, 45 points from the Jags offense. Really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that's not that kind of offense. I mean, I think both teams left nothing on the field. They gave everything they could. I mean, Ben, 3-for-5 touchdowns. He basically dragged the Steelers back into this one.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Brown, for, you know, being out, I thought he had a tremendous game. You know, it looked at him and go, wow, for what he was able to accomplish despite the fact of coming back from injury. And I just didn't know where this one was going to go. And I know a lot of Steelers fans are not happy. It's like, you know, Tomlin's going to keep his job. Jaguars got what they could from Bortles, but more importantly, what they were able to do on the ground. But for me, the other side of it is the fact that what the Jags defense gave up.
Yeah.
That also should be the big story here. And I think a lot of people have kind of forgot about that. Is that just because the Jags won and they're going, oh, you know, they'll be able to do this to Brady, they'll be able to do this to Brady, they go up 42 points.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I think New England have got a better game plan than what Pittsburgh have got.
Yeah, I mean, and you talk about, you know, Belichick is obviously going to be looking at that and capitalize on how you score, you know, if Pittsburgh can put 40, you know, Pittsburgh can get 42 points off of them. You know, what the hell can Tom Brady do? And, you know, Pittsburgh does not have the same defense that New England does. So when you actually look at just how many points in this back-and-forth game, it was, you know, your neck was hurting just from turning it back and forth all the time. Again, yeah, I mean, it was a sad but fun game. It was exciting to watch the back-and-forth of it. And especially, I think, in the UK, for the Jags fans, where they're starting to build a base here, it was exciting. It was exciting to watch, but... When you sort of look at it, yeah, there is a feeling that we were like, oh, crap, they're going to have to play the Patriots, who are going to be prepared for this and prepared to put up as many points as Pittsburgh did.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, I think for me, I mean, when you play at home in a playoff game, you want to be, I think you should be aggressive.
Yeah.
And for me, Pittsburgh weren't aggressive from the get-go. They were very, very conservative. And then before they knew it, they had dug themselves a hole. And I was looking at this going, okay, well, I against that Jags defense, I don't think they can come back from this, even though it is Ben, you know what he can do. You know, and the rest of our offense, Antonio Brown and everything else that goes along with that. But I just didn't see him coming back. So fair play for Steelers coming back into this game and making it a game and then unfortunately losing. But they were their own worst enemy in this one. And I didn't see the Jags winning this.
No.
So they've now gone on and won this game. They now move along. You know, I think Jacksonville fans are kind of getting a little bit carried away. And again, they're probably increasing their fan base maybe as much as Patriots fans are. So... You know, any success from a Jacksonville franchise over here could be very interesting going forward.
It's very successful to them. I mean, they're so happy they're throwing Buffalo fans through tables. That's how excited that they are. You know, it was that sort of, I think it was a funny meme I actually saw, something in the fact that, you know, it's called Heinz Field because Pittsburgh's always playing catch-up. But it was just one of those where Pittsburgh, you're just like, Jesus, what are you going to do now? And it was this sort of coming back game. But it was just sort of one of those that on the Sunday, it was, ooh, this is good. We're building up to something, which then built up to the wildest, craziest game, which we were expecting. You know, I was calling this when I said it might go to overtime, and it didn't. It was very close, though. I mean, Jesus, we watched the game in the Hippodrome. I was telling you about this, that, you know, I was sort of cheering for New Orleans because I liked New Orleans. I thought they'd be a good – I cheer for any team with the best chance of beating the Patriots.
Yeah.
And to me, that was New Orleans. But, you know, I mean, we sort of touched on it earlier, but that coverage, that last coverage of that last play to let Diggs get that touchdown, that was just atrocious what they did. That was just horrible defense, horrible coverage. I mean, and what's his name? Williams, I guess the guy was covering him, who's been playing, he's a rookie, been playing well all year.
Yeah, I know,
That was just, it was an emotional day of football. That was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I know Payne's already come out and said, isn't he, that, you know, it's going to take a hard, long look at this and be very, very difficult to get over this one. And I can understand now. I mean, this is the sort of stuff that will eat you alive through an off-season because you've got such a big gap before you can start putting this fire. And the trouble is, when you got Breeze as your quarterback, you do kind of wonder how much longer you have to go.
Yeah.
You know, how many more shots have you got at this? And I thought New Orleans, the same as you, was, you know, they had a really good shot this year. For me, they were the best team in the NFC. They could have given Brady and the Patriots a hell of a game. And then to watch the Vikings cough up a double-digit lead, mm-hmm. and then the Saints to come back into this, back and forth, back and forth. Then the Saints take the lead with the field goal, and I'm like, okay, this is it now.
Yeah.
But you, as you say, you don't make that play.
Nah,
you don't make that play on week one in the regular season. You definitely don't make it in a playoff game. You play much better coverage. You don't go for the almost what looked like the all or nothing play.
Yeah.
You can't do that at that point. And the minute he catches that, that game is over.
Yeah.
You know, horrible play calling, as you said, horrible. Just everything about it, just like, oh, I hated it. It makes a hero out of Keenum, who I didn't think played that
well. I don't think Keenum played well. I mean, he is a smaller quarterback. He's shorter. I found him struggling most of the day. I thought a lot of his passes were short. They were underthrown. I just didn't think he had a lot of zip on the ball. And he was making some really bad vision plays. And when you start doing that, you start seeing that, it's like, Jesus, you know, this is the big game here. New Orleans defense did look a bit tenuous until that second half where they started getting everything going together again, and that momentum just kept going. But even that pass he threw, I mean, it's lucky that you've got receivers like Diggs and Thielen who are big guys who can make those jumping grabs, because, you know, that's basically the only thing that kept them in the game.
Yeah, I mean, in some respects, I didn't even actually like the call over to Diggs. I thought that was just, you know, kind of like the obvious play. And maybe you should have gone with something a bit more unorthodox. Mm-hmm. Appreciate sideline play and all of that, and that's the kind of thing you look at. But it's easy for me to say in hindsight, I didn't necessarily like the play. It did work out. They're going to call it, what is it, the miracle in Minnesota? Whatever they're going to call it. I think Saints fans might want to call it something else. But I mean, even like you took the quarterbacks on the day. I mean, Breeze got off to a horrific start as well. Then he went to work. That's what we expected. That's the reason why the Saints came back in this game. But again, it's kind of like the Falcons, a missed opportunity. And I think a Saints-Falcons NFC Championship game is a better NFC Championship game than the Vikings against the Eagles.
Yeah, no, exactly. I agree with you. I think it would have been a very exciting game the way that they sort of played out. But you know that that's football. It happens at the last minute. Everyone, you know, obviously the Minnesota fans are happy. I still don't think they're going to make it. And even if they do, I think they'll get blown out at home. But I was sort of like, whoa, emotionally drained, still wondering what the fuck happened. And obviously I was quite upset because I lost some money on that game. But that is the most important thing. Now, of course, we look to the big conference championships this weekend. Games are at 8:05 and 11:40 p.m. British time. A little late for a work night, but fuck it, people like us, buddy, we don't have to. Jacksonville in New England. New England 9-point favorites. The over-under is 46.5 points. I mean, the line to me is a little off, depending, you know, because we had 7 points the Jacksonville on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a worse team than New England, so I would have expected this spread to be somewhere around 11 or 12, not 9. But, you know, it's worth taking New England, I think, on these points.
I take New England on both. I take New England to beat the spread, and I take the over as well. I think this could be, if you look at the fact that, you know, the points that the Jags gave up against the Steelers and the fact that the Patriots will go through the throat, the Patriots are going to look to try and get rid of this game early. I mean, some interesting points about this one is, obviously, you've got the battles in the field. You've got Brady against the defense. I mean, we're going to have to expect more from Bortles this weekend, because there's a lot of problems at the moment. But Fournette's ankle, they don't quite know what that's going to be like. He came back into the game. Is that going to be, you know, 100%? No. So they're going to have to get production out of him. So a lot more reliance on Bortles.
Plus the car accident where a Patriots fan smashed into him.
Yeah, just get rid of the only thing on there. But I mean, the Pats defense has held its last three opponents to just 63 yards per game on the ground.
Yeah. No, they're really good on the deep. They've been very good against the run.
Yeah, and people are not, I don't think people are talking about that. So with the Jags' heavy reliance on the run, because you can't rely on Bortles, you then think to yourself that Brady's going to completely utilize Deion Lewis, Gronk, Amendola. They're going to be his favorite targets all day long. And as long as he continues to just do that, not get stuck in a pocket where it's going to collapse. We know it.
Yeah.
Because that Jags defense is just going to try and get to Brady as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
It's going to be what's going to happen maybe when the Jags defense hits him the first time. Because if I'm the Jags defense, I'm going to want to hit him.
Oh, yeah, hit him and put him down. Exactly. Yeah.
And just give him, you know, a bit of
a savage beating.
What could happen to you if you don't get rid of that ball?
And
it's difficult with Brady because he's very experienced. We know him, the greatest of all time, dare we say. Whereas if you've got like a younger quarterback in there, you can hit him hard. And all of a sudden it gets into the mindset of, I've got to release the ball quicker. Yeah. Brady won't do that. Yeah. Brady will trust his instincts that he knows what he can do.
Yeah.
That, again, is the reason why Brady is, you know, great, and other quarterbacks are trying to measure up to Brady. Yeah. So for me, a lot of people think it's going to be close. I think Brady and the Patriots are going to win this quite comfortably. I wouldn't be surprised if they win this by, you know, 13 points. And I do think the over on this one.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that you did, one of the things I noticed about that Jags defense is they do have a lot of ability to come through and blind you. You know, that, and Ben was sort of seeing that where you don't see it, suddenly one guy sort of breaks a tackle and he's through and they got a hand on you. You know, luckily Ben is fat and he can just turtle and go down like a big old ball. But it is something we sort of talked about. As I mentioned last week, that I thought that Gronk was going to have a good game, and he did. And it, again, they can't stop the tight ends. This team is not good at effective at stopping tight ends. And as we said, quick passes, quick outs. And that's exactly what they're going to do. And the Jacksonville will not going to be able to prepare for that. I think Gronk is going to have one hell of a game. Because, you know, who are they going to put on him?
No.
You know, and you put Ramsey on him, you know?
Yeah.
So I see this again. I've got the score is 34-14. That's my sort of prediction of this game.
And a lot of people don't think it's going to be that wide open. I mean, you've put it down as a 20-point game. I've got it down as a 13-point game. We're both going over on the points. I think a lot of people are buying a hell of a lot into this Jags defense. Yes, it is a great defense.
Yes.
But you are going against the person that can pick apart any defense.
Yes.
And that's where the issue is. And for what Brady can do is like no other. And that's, he is the ultimate test for any defensive blueprint. You can come in there with the best game possible, and Brady can just pick that apart. Got to put him on his backside. And even if you don't get him in the sack, you've got to hit him and hit him hard. You know, Ben is a lot bigger, you know,
he's
a lot built and everything else. But if you want to do it with Brady, no, put him down and let's see how he works out. Because I don't think this is going to be close. I would like it to be.
Yeah.
I just can't see it.
I would maybe just try to sneak some tomatoes into his food. Because apparently the nightshade, he just can't eat those. Ruin his TB12 diet. Hey, do you know you're actually eating pork chops there? Oh, my God! this is going to be a blowout. The game that I'm still trying to figure out, this game. Minnesota are 3-point favorites going into Philadelphia. They are playing outside. Philadelphia is one of those teams that like to chuck batteries at people. but, you know, they had a boring, very low-scoring affair last week. 38.5 is the over-under in this one. Again, probably be a cold day in Philadelphia. I'm torn in this game. What are you thinking, Steve?
I'm going to go under on this one. Yeah, I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think whoever wins the Eagles running game Vikings defense battle, I think, goes a long way to winning. So again, we're looking at a trench foul, which is what the Eagles utilize to beat the Falcons. I think the Vikings defense will cause Foles all kinds of fits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to react well to playing against a defense like that. I mean, it's nowhere near what he faced the week before. That's a completely different kind of fish. You know, I trust Keenum more. I mean, that says something when we look at what Keenum was like last week. Looked a little bit nervous. And again, it's a championship game.
Yeah.
Foles and Keenum, this is, you know, unknown territory, really, for these guys.
Well, I mean, they're buddies under the Fisher days.
So, you know, they've got to play this game that they're one away from the Super Bowl. They are, you know, they're under a hell of a lot of pressure. Minnesota, I've got this really strange one where they go on the road to the championship game, but then are at home in the Super Bowl, potentially, which is really weird.
Even though no one's been at home at a Super Bowl before.
No, and this is it. You know, it's an opportunity for them to do it. And I think it is going to be cold, but I've been in Minnesota. It is freezing up there. They may not be, you know, playing outside, but it is bitterly cold up there. I honestly think that the Vikings win this. I'm a bit surprised that they're going to have points in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is really just a home field that they've given Philadelphia. So I'm going to go with the Vikings to win this in a very, very close game and maybe something like 17-14.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very low-scoring, tight game. You know, the Philadelphia defense impressed me last week. They were playing very well, and they kept the team in it. And this is going to be that one of the defensive battles, like old-time hockey, you know, these guys just sort of facing off against each other. The only thing is that there were, you know, with Minnesota, you know, as we watched, and I think they'll be looking at this, how quickly Drew Brees was able to sort of pick holes in them. He was able to figure it out. Obviously, Nick Foles does not have the same pinpoint accuracy or the arm or the vision of Brees. But I am really tight in this one. I was thinking about this, and I was like going, I think it's going to be like 7-3 or just something horrible. But yeah, I do have Minnesota to win this by like a point. And I think it's just be as tight as last. It could be a game like last week where it just comes down to, you know, who's the least of an idiot. But I have this one. I'm going to go with 14-13. That's pretty much what I'm thinking of, 14-13. It's just going to be one of those sort of blah games.
Yeah.
But definitely take the under in this one. Then of course we'll be talking next week about the Pro Bowl, because that's...
Yeah, I mean, we'll obviously have a lot of thoughts around the spread on that one, and the over and under, and... You know, and obviously those vaunted defenses with those big hits.
Yes. In the Pro Bowl. Oh, the big hits. Yeah. The only thing he's hitting on is the girlfriends. That's the only thing. They love going to those things, so you can bring your girlfriend, leave the wife at home, leave the kids, you know. I think the great thing about the Pro Bowl is what you'll get is a lot of possession of marijuana, a lot of possession of alcohol. Those are the only possessions you're really going to see in that one, because everyone's off golfing. Everyone's just, like, chilling.
Well, that's the best drives you're going to see.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about NBA for a second. We had the NBA game in London last weekend. You went to it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a really interesting game. I thought it was, you know, a great game to have over here. Sixers got off to a really fast start. And then as I'm watching the game, they moved away from J.J. Redick. I mean, J.J. Redick was just, like, on fire, knocking down everything. They took him out early with Embiid. Then they brought Redick back and he wasn't the same player. I mean, like, you don't take the hottest hand on the court out of the game after 5 minutes. Celtics gradually, like, you know, chipped away. Eventually, their defense just kind of created enough for them, and Boston were able to win it. I think it was a really good advert for the game over here. I know there's been, you know, after we had our show, there was talk that Adam Silver is open to possibility of what I said about having the All-Star weekend over in London, because I think it's a really good opportunity to do it. And I thought that, you know, the highlight was anyone who hasn't seen it, the comedy moment of Jack Whitehall doing the blindfolded shot where he thinks he's made the shot and he hasn't, goes nuts, and then realised that it's all been a ruse after all, thanks to my good friend Simon, who was the host there and who perpetrated that little trick on Jack Whitehall. But the atmosphere was good as well, and I think what you normally get with the London games is that the lower bowl, of course, the corporate, a lot of people have been very critical of it, because people don't turn up. But the lower bowl for me was pretty full.
Yeah.
And the upper bowl was really full. So I think, again, that's really great when we start looking at how many people actually come. There's still the big issue of ticketing. And I think that's, for me, what I would like to see. It's not the NBA's fault. And I don't know how much say they can have it. I mean, it's obviously the secondary science. But why not have two games over here? We had it with Toronto and the Nets when they were in New Jersey, mm-hmm. Brooklyn a few years ago. Have it on a Saturday and Sunday. Have one as a, you know, a 6 o'clock game on a Saturday. Another one as, say, 7 o'clock or whatever on a Sunday. And just give, you know, younger people a chance to go along to these things. Maybe that might help in terms of more people getting these games that want to go and see mm-hmm. them. And I think that's something that does need to be looked at. A Thursday night in the week, 8 o'clock for me, is not great. I think it doesn't. It definitely doesn't help families. It makes getting out of the O2 an absolute nightmare.
Yeah. How long did it take you to go to there?
Well, I left the end of the third quarter because I was like, I want to get home. But that's it.
Exactly. But those are the kind of things the NBA UK should be looking at.
Yeah.
Are those stories of people going, yeah, it's 8 o'clock at night on a front Thursday. This is too late.
Yeah, and this is it. I mean, by the time I left, it was still like, you know, 10 to 10. So you're still kind of needing to get out of there. I mean, I wasn't home much before midnight. Yeah, well, I don't live in London, but it makes it very, very difficult for people in the north to go to these games. You know, you've got to come down maybe and take a day off work and all mm-hmm. stuff like that. Put it on the weekend. That's one advantage of the NFL being when they come to London. These games on a weekend, they've looked at some of these like afternoon games, which again is more advantageous for people in the north that are not in London.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA, I think, really does need to look at it. And people are crying out for the NBA over here. Is it so difficult to play a home and home series of NBA teams in this country?
No.
I don't think it is. I think obviously the difficult part is trying to get a team to give up a home game. Obviously, Philadelphia gave up one of their home games mm-hmm. for this one. I mean, come on, these teams play 41 games at home.
Well, exactly. It's not like the NFL where you've got like 7 home games or 8 home games. This is, you've got loads of home games. It's like hockey, you've got loads to give up, or baseball, loads to give up. I think the other thing you look at, too, is that there was Lowell Deng, I guess, who we only had, was the only British player. You know, we had France has had 10 players. Germany's had like 5 players. Australia's had like 7 NBA players. Britain really hasn't had any NBA players.
No, I mean, the thing is, yeah, I mean, Lowell Deng, I mean, I would loosely call Ben Gordon a UK player, bear in mind that he was given a passport. It's very difficult, isn't it, to get... I mean, Anunoby is obviously the one now with the Raptors.
Yeah.
I mean, a hell of a prospect he is. But we need to get more players in there. And you take a look at like the blueprint of, say, like Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's Australian players coming into the NBA now all the time.
Yeah.
So
Canada, obviously, we've got a lot of basketball players, and basketball's big for us. Yeah.
Prominent Canadian player. I mean, we've got to kind of get to that level. And when you think about like our best players in the NBA right now, as I say, Anunoby is a rookie for Toronto, and Lowell Deng is trying to get himself out of the Lakers.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's really all we have right now. So I think, you know, to grow the global game, which is what the NBA is trying to do, I'm not necessarily sure that the UK is necessarily the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bit surprised at what they should do is look at games in the UK, Germany, Spain, and not just pre-season games, but look at regular season games. Not only have like the game in Mexico City as well.
Yeah.
But I think that's something they need to look at. And I think, you know, what you hear from UK fans is, oh, well, you know, we don't get the games anymore, but people travel from all over Europe into London to watch the games.
Yeah.
Is it so difficult for us to do exactly the opposite? I mean, I went to Stockholm to watch 2 NHL games.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to go watch hockey.
Sure.
Stockholm's only a couple of hours away. It's not far.
Especially if you're a hockey fan, big fan there. And I mean, but you also, when you start talking, because there has to be this youth culture, the grassroots that starts it up, and you wonder if British basketball is that poorly organized that they're not allowing to develop this to happen. But then you start looking, you have so many of these players now from Eastern Europe, anything that ends in ania. But you know that these guys are coming over, and so you look and why not have a game? Why not do it in Berlin? You know, why not do it in Germany where everyone can come to, where you've got all the French in? Or, as you say, do 2 games in London, 2 games in France, 2 games in Germany, something like that, to keep building the international.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Mexico is close to America, but that you want to keep building this European growth for it.
Yeah, and I think, for me, that's something that I would look to even replace the All-Star Weekend with, kind of like have a five-game series between the East and the West played over, say, three or four different cities.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be like, you know, almost like kind of like a Ryder Cup format, which is something that's been rumoured about the NHL.
Yeah.
Is maybe looking at that, something like that.
Yeah, just like the World Cup of Hockey again,
yeah,
like we did last.
Yeah, just something different. And it's just another way of doing, you know, kind of like bragging rights between the East and the West.
Yeah.
To make people care about something, you've got to make it relevant.
Yeah.
And you've got to make their players want to care about it. So you've got to kind of link it to the regular season to a point.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is as well is that, I mean, Boston and Philadelphia had to have a week off for this game. You know, that makes it very, very difficult at times when you look at the rest of their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the NBA is trying to cut down on these back-to-backs and four and fives and all stuff like that. Well, Chicago still just had that.
Yeah.
They've just had four and five, or three and four, whatever it was, back-to-backs, eight games in 12 days. There's still that in the schedule. Best thing you can do is just cut down the number of games if you're willing to do that. Because for me, if I want to go and see the NBA product, when I want to go and see it in March, I still want to be able to go and see the best players playing the game.
Yeah.
So again, that's another argument. You've got to kind of move around that. But there's a lot of things here. NBA UK, listen to us. We've got some good ideas.
Exactly. What, I don't even watch like the European basketball. Do you watch this European basketball league?
Only if I'm interested in like looking at different prospects. I mean, I watched Mirotić before he came out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. I mean, Doncic at the moment is obviously lighting up as well. But I mean, the standard is for us when we think about not the NBA is we'll still look at NCAA. That's what we look at. I mean, Trae Young's lighting up from Oklahoma there. Looks like a really good point guard of the future for whoever picks him up. But, I mean, that's where you're going to get the majority of your players from. Yeah, you will get, like, a sprinkle of players coming over from Europe. I mean, obviously, like, Saric came, got drafted by the Sixers, and he spent an extra couple of years in Europe before he eventually made it to the NBA. You've got the whole thing around when NBA teams want these guys, they've almost got to kind of buy out their contracts from these Euro League teams. The standard's very good. But again, for us UK fans, it's very difficult to watch it. Mm-hmm. And we've got the, you know, much NBA being given to us, which again, I don't think helps our British game. Look at the British game for me, that it's disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
The UK basketball and the NBA are not in partnership or anything else like that, as far as I'm concerned. Yes, they had like the junior NBA clinic over here when the NBA was in town. So it's kind of looking at the grassroots, but the actual existing league for me, it's still not great. I've worked on the inside of it. I've been quite critical of it in the past, along with a lot of other people. I mean, John Amici has been very, very critical mm-hmm. of it as well. And there's a lot of things wrong in that league that need sorting out.
I think a lot of leagues, but yeah, I haven't really watched it. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of drama going on in the NBA going on these days. The fight between the Clippers and the Rockets. With Ariza and Blake Griffin. I don't know if it was over a Kardashian. but, you know, they were, you know, going to locker rooms and there was, like, going to be fights and all that kind of stuff.
You know what the funny thing is about all of this? Because I was reading it afterwards because, obviously, the story unfolded. And mm-hmm. for me, you have one Rockets guy went to, I think it was Capella, who went to the locker room, knocked on the door, no answer. And then all of a sudden, Chris Paul, of course, a former Clippers player, finds some secret hallway into the locker room. And I was like, hang on a second here. He knows he's in Arena Inside Out, probably better than Danny Ocean knows casinos in Ocean's 11. And it was just crazy. It just then escalated from there. They wanted, obviously, to for Griffin and Rivers to come out. The stupid thing is with all of this was that Rivers was in street clothes.
Yeah.
He didn't actually play in this game. Griffin was thrown out. He was given a standing ovation by the Clippers crowd. You did your job. The Rockets lost control. They didn't have James Harden in this game. I think CP3 got kind of like a mixed reaction when he came back to LA, which was a bit sad, to be honest. And I think he kind of felt a bit put out by it all, and I thought he thought he'd maybe get like a better reception than he did. I mean, if this turns into a playoff season, the Clippers are playing very, very well right now.
Yeah, they are. They're starting to get some wins, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, Lou Williams has just been phenomenal coming off the bench for them lately. So if they get into, say, that, you know, that 7th, 8th spot and get matched up against the Rockets in a first-round playoff series, all of a sudden, that looks very, very tasty.
Well, if you can emotionally disrupt, which it seems like the Clippers have a good job, and Blake Griffin can be a real cock, so that's always a good thing. The other thing I was going to touch on was that Isaiah Thomas, they're going to do the tribute, which which is weird. On the same day they were going to put up your Paul's jersey, retire his jersey, which he's like, don't do it on that time. But no. is it really good to, I mean, to do a tribute for a guy who's only there for a couple of years?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, I think, again, it's just kind of ridiculous. I know what he did for the franchise. You know, not many players went through what he went through, not only on the court, but also off the court last season as well. And he kind of laid it all on the line. And, you know, a lot of people love him in Boston, and rightly so, for what he did for the community and everything else. But, you know, I think the video is a bad idea. I don't agree with anything like that. I mean, again, I think it's kind of like a testimonial in English football, isn't it? You know, you've been there 10 years.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. If you've been there, like, your whole career, then, yeah, sure, tribute video is fine.
For three years, yeah.
You know, Paul Pierce played for the Celtics up until a point of where Danny Ainge wanted to very, very nicely get rid of everything that they had at that time. So he got rid of Paul Pierce, got rid of Kevin Garnett. So what he wanted to try and do was rebuild the team. So for the Celtics to then kind of look at that going forward and go, okay, well, we want to kind of rebuild. So Paul Pierce, how much truth is in that, like, Paul Pierce made? Yeah. Oh, yeah, kind of get rid of me, you know, build the Celtics of the future, you know, fleece the Nets and all that. I don't know. But, I mean, when I think of Paul Pierce, I think of Boston Celtics. I think he is overrated by a lot of Boston Celtics fans.
Yeah.
But I still think he is a Celtics legend, and rightly so, will have his jersey up in the rafters. I mean, a lot of people that I know went to the game Boston last, I think it was last season, where he had his last appearance there. And a very, very emotional night, and everything else that went on with that. So, yeah. And I think actually he's a decent analyst. You know, from what I've, you know, seen of him so far, really good analyst, but a completely, really bad idea from a very, very professional organization.
How about Anthony Davis? I was watching some highlights of him. On fire. The only thing that's not on fire is that unibrow. But man, he's really been playing and adding, like, New Orleans putting up some good numbers for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people are calling that the best week or so of his NBA career, which is a bit sad when you think about the fact that he was supposed to be a generational talent that's not really developed into that. A lot of injuries along the way that have kind of held him back a bit. I've got to talk at length about how I don't like the twin towers of Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins, because I just don't think they mesh together. Alvin Gentry has done an awful job coaching that team. The first thing obviously going to look at is Boogie probably going elsewhere. Although now they're taking Boogie off the market, and I'm like, well, that's not a great idea. Anthony Davis, how much truth there is behind it, whether or not he has said he wants to play for what he calls a more professional organisation,
mm-hmm,
and potentially cited teams that he would be willing to play for, one of those being the San Antonio Spurs, because I think there is no better professional organisation than them. But he's played phenomenal. I mean, a very big reason for their win last night. And when he plays like that, he is unstoppable. I remember in college, and he was just man against ball.
Yeah, he was. I mean, talking about also guys looking to get traded, DeAndre Jordan. is he going to Cleveland? Is he going to Houston? What's he going to do?
DeAndre Jordan's an interesting one, because I think, you know, it depends on what the Clippers view themselves as. I think up until maybe 3 weeks ago, they viewed themselves as sellers.
Mm-hmm.
But Lou Williams has maybe changed a few people's thoughts around that, and maybe there'll be a team that stays put. DeAndre Jordan, again, is another guy that you get equal value for. DeAndre Jordan is a guy that is a whole big drama unto himself, because of the whole saga around the Maverick situation when he's last a free agent. Do the Clippers really want to reinvest in DeAndre? That's an interesting one. Bearing in mind they didn't receive, they didn't want to go forward with CP3, but they decided to with Blake.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cleveland really is only landing spot, and what's made things more desperate for Cleveland is that Boogie Cousins is off the market, Marcus Gasol's off the market. All of a sudden, we're hearing all these names that are not available,
mm-hmm,
which might make Cleveland all of a sudden then kind of maybe panic a bit. They do have that Nets pick, but that Nets pick is looking less and less valuable all the time because the Nets are starting to win.
Mm-hmm.
So Cleveland need to make that move. But again, I've had this conversation with somebody else about this. Is that even if Cleveland go and get DeAndre Jordan, if you look at them in a potential finals matchup against the Warriors, because that's where you have to look at it, the Warriors will consistently dress three of the four best players in the court and four of the best six.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you do that, you're going to win an NBA Finals. I don't think that any team can take three games off the Warriors, let alone four. The only case you can make of teams maybe having the best player on the court at any one time Is Cleveland with LeBron? You want to have the argument with me about James Harden or KD? I could go either way on that, but they're the only two teams. You look at Boston, Kyrie is below Steph and KD. The only team that maybe has the fourth best player on the court is if you want to argue CP3 over Klay Thompson, which again is another difficult argument depending on what you want to play. So, yeah, Cleveland are looking bad right now. And I think somebody made a comparison for when David Blatt was in charge. Blatt lost his job for a very similar month that Tyronn Lue's having. The only difference is LeBron likes Tyronn Lue and the fact that Tyronn Lue has a championship. David Blatt doesn't. He had this storied career in Europe that really didn't translate to the NBA game, unfortunately. So I think Cleveland will make the move, but I don't think it's the answer to their problems.
We're also going to talk, I mean, Toronto lost another game to Philadelphia. Embiid was playing like fire again. Toronto's one of those teams, again, that you know you can have DeRozan not playing really well, and then Toronto is just one of those teams, as we've talked about before, is just missing those extra men to actually win a championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about having that 1A. I mean, I talk about it a lot, is that a lot of teams have a 1B, have a 2, but a 1A is your superstar, and that's what you don't have. They have DeRozan, they have Lowry, they have a very good coach in Casey, they have Ibaka. But you cannot call Lowry, DeRozan, and Ibaka a big three. That's not a big three.
Half three.
Yeah. I mean, they're a good team. But again, for me, they always are one of those teams in the Eastern Conference. So I take a look at who they're playing the first round of the playoffs and go, yeah, that's potentially a playoff matchup that's not going to be in their favour. They could lose that. An upset waiting to happen. They've potentially gone as far as they can. They need to add to it, but I just don't see how they can do it, and that's the issue. I think Lowry will eventually become overrated. DeRozan has added a three-point shot to his game, which gives him an added dimension.
To be traded.
Potentially. I mean, that is it. You have to look at it from that point of view. But if you look at the East, you're still going to look at Boston and Cleveland.
Yeah.
And if Boston had Hayward, you would definitely only be looking at those two teams.
Yeah.
The fact that Toronto's only in this argument is the fact that they will have another dimension to their game this season, and they can give potentially Boston another run for their money, because I think, you know, the wheels will eventually come off of Boston as the season goes along.
Yeah.
But Cleveland are still, for me, even with all the problems I've just said, they'll make the move DeAndre, they'll still have enough in the East, but they will not have enough for the finals.
Let's move on to NHL, because it's we're running on time here. Bod with the bod, ba-dang, bibbidi, Kid Rock, huh?
I know, man.
All-Star game. Who would have thought that Kid Rock would polarize the NHL this much?
If he does guitar with a hockey stick, that will probably make my night.
Well, he's already got the mullet. He's already got the hockey hair going. Jeremy Roenick calls him the greatest rock and roller of all time.
Wow.
Which, yeah, I know. Roenick, Jesus. Well, it's me, a hit to the head. Did you see Dan Girardi took a big one to the head yesterday? That was a slap shot and a half. Jesus.
I mean,
those are the ones. I mean, I've taken a few slap shots to the head, as you can tell. But that one was just one you're just like, oh, man, that was a hard one.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few lately, and you're just looking at it going, yeah, I'm glad I don't play.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, it's a physical game. You know, stating the obvious. But it is going to happen from time to time, and there is some things when you look at it and go, yeah, I don't want to see that. And then they'll show like 10 replays.
Yeah, no, of course, that's it in hockey.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, just make sure so you can see that. There you go. There's a moment. That's a moment it's orbital bone fractured. You know, you've got some interesting stuff. Vegas continues to crush and do well. The only thing they're not doing well with is the U.S. Army, who obviously Foley, who went to West Point, admitted that he took the design from the U.S. Army. Admitted it. And now that the U.S. Army has sued them, he's sort of come back, yeah, well, you guys don't play hockey. So it's pretty snide and pretty snippety that they're sort of coming around this. But you just sort of wonder, like, you never really see the Army sue people. But how Vegas, if he's going to actually have to change the look of this logo that they've invested in.
Welcome to modern-day America, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. I want to sue. You sue. But it's an interesting thing, and Vegas just playing so well, and we talked about it now, that they are, you know, they're the leaders in the West and big contenders, so.
Yeah, I mean, they lost in overtime to the Oilers. Last night they lost to the Predators, which was the rematch of the game from about a week ago when Vegas blanked the Predators.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I still have the Predators coming out of the West. I think Vegas will kind of tinker things at the deadline because I think they'll want to add some more scoring, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's going to be tough. They want playoff experience. There isn't much on that lineup, and that's needed. You've got to go and get some guys that, you know, can, that's been there, seen it, done it all. You know, if you really want to make a run at the Cup, which I think is still a one step beyond from them this season, you've got to go and get those guys because you don't know when you're next going to have that opportunity. They're playing incredibly well.
Yeah.
But for me, it's still the Predators in the West and it's the Lightning in the East.
Yeah, no, it's and those traditional hockey towns of Tampa and Nashville. we're talking about Jaromir Jagr. Calgary has really started to put their season around. They're 54 points already. This is a team that was really bad. I mean, the coach throwing a stick into the stands. But Calgary has sort of turned it around, and now, unfortunately, is this the end for the 45-year-old Jagr?
I think, unfortunately, it is the end of Jagr in the NHL. I mean, I know before he was put on injured reserve, they was kind of looking at ways to try and get him to another NHL team. And let's not forget, I mean, when he joined the Flames, it wasn't at the start of the season. He was, like, hanging around. He didn't make the Czech Olympic team. Again, of course, he had some thoughts around injuries and everything else. And I don't necessarily think he was actually that interesting playing at the Olympics.
Yeah, getting smoked.
But, I mean, he's got one goal and six assists in 22 games. I mean, you look at his lifetime numbers, 766 goals, 1,155 assists. I mean, those are just ridiculous numbers. When I first got into
2,000 models, Victoria's Secret models.
Yeah, and a fair few mullets.
Yeah.
You know, I remember him when I first started watching the NHL. You know, he was part of that wonderful Penguins team with Mo Lemieux, Kevin Stevens and Paul Coffey. And now all of a sudden, we're at a point of where, you know, this is it now. He is going to, unfortunately, not be able to play in the NHL anymore. I don't think his hockey career is over because as long as he can still skate, I think he'll still play.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So I think maybe a move to the back to the KHL where you play three seasons before. And again, look at those numbers. He played in the KHL for a few years as well. So
yeah.
I think that's where he's potentially going to end up. But a decision will need to be made soon for him to be able to do that.
Yeah, and the only place I could see him is actually in the broadcasting booth after this. I think he's got enough of personality. His English has improved.
Yeah.
He could be one of those guys. The other person who's actually been injured, which I'm going to miss the rest of the season, Corey Crawford, which is scary because when you've got vertigo, especially as a goalie, you can't see. You know, he can't balance. He doesn't have vision. I mean, that's a pretty serious injury for a goaltender.
It's a very serious injury for a goaltender. And vertigo is one of those things. I remember reading, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it was a baseball player back when I first started watching the game back in the late 80s.
Dizzy Dean?
That had, no, not that old. Boom, boom. That's your second bad joke of the podcast. But he had vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that you're like, what, well, hacking your vertigo and play?
Yeah.
But there is no way to think, oh, well, how long is he going to be out for?
Yeah.
You just don't know. The one thing, I'm being a bit smug about the Blackhawks because I predicted them to be barely a playoff team. And I got so much crap from Blackhawks fans over this because they were like, yeah, you know, we got upset in the playoffs last year by the Preds. We'll be a Stanley Cup contender. No, you're not.
Yeah.
You're getting old and you're not a contender.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You know, you're going backwards. You're actually bringing back in players you got rid of.
Mm-hmm.
No, you have salary cap issues every year. Taves and Kane's contract continue to eat up your cap. You're not able to improve. You will get worse and worse. You are barely a playoff team. Listen to me. And I swear, like, one Blackhawks fan turned around and went, oh, I suppose I don't need to watch a season now then. It's like, well,
that's right, you don't. Yeah.
You know, you want to believe, everyone believes. Like, I believe the Avalanche can be great, and they have been for the last seven games. But, you know, you've got to be a realist around this as well. The Blackhawks are not a good team. It is bad for Corey Crawford because I really do like him as a netminder.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys looking to be traded as well before the deadline, but I think we should, you know, we're wrapping this up now. Let's talk about the All-Star, starting to list the All-Star. They got a five-day break, but you've got the All-Star coming up. What are your thoughts on the All-Star game? I mean, we always talked about how jokey they are, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they're always jokey. I always kind of like skills competitions. I mean,
it's in Tampa this year, which is going to be fun.
Yeah, Tampa's going to be fun. I did maybe consider about maybe going, because it is in Tampa. It'd be quite good fun. I think it's more about, as it always is, the snubs.
Mm-hmm.
We always look at the snubs. I mean, for me, Jakub Voracek, Phil Kessel is a big time snub.
Well,
and I think I'm going to see him chug some beer whilst he shoots.
Oh yeah.
But I think that the one that really stood out for me, and I think the sad one, especially from a Blues point of view, is Vladimir Tarasenko. For anyone who's known Vladimir over the last season, certainly, is all about the Ari Dugan story of the little girl who had cancer and sadly passed away, that Tarasenko befriended. And I thought it would have been kind of nice during this season, because I think Tarasenko potentially would have done something for Ari whilst he's at the All-Star weekend. And he's a great player. I would have liked to have seen him there. I mean, other notable snubs, Bobrovsky, I think, was a big-time snub. And Marchessault, who's having a tremendous season for Vegas. So they're kind of like the snubs. I think it's going to be a good weekend, but it is what it is. We know what All-Star games are like. We like them sometimes, we don't others.
Yeah, I mean, they have made some changes to the All-Star games recently. I think in the past few years when they've started doing it, to make it more interactive, to make it more engaging, because it used to be, you know, for me, watching Al McGinnis have the hardest slap shot, you know? and then they've added this sort of depth to it, and it is feels like when you go to the Hockey Hall of Fame, all the little fun things you can play when you're in Toronto. But it's, again, you know, it's one of those things that, I mean, we've got the Pro Bowl coming up. Are you really going to watch it? No.
I mean, this is it. I mean, you talk about the hardest shot. I mean, or you just clear the arena for when Zdeno Chara takes one of the shots as well, because otherwise he just might kill somebody.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will watch it. As I say, Tampa maybe kind of thought, yeah, I might go, maybe, you know, get some sunshine, get away from, you know,
get away from the family.
Yeah. All in the name of good stuff and all.
Exactly.
That.
All the work. One last we'll just touch on quickly, just as we go, because it was announced the NFL games for England. Yeah. The next one. So we've got. John Gruden is coming over. I mean, I'd heard the rumors, and it turns out the rumors are true. Seahawks versus the Raiders on October 14th in Tottenham Stadium, one game there. Eagles versus Jaguars on 21st or 28th, and Tennessee Titans versus Chargers 21st, 28th. All teams that were almost in the playoffs, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, people are already talking about it. I've seen on certain places, oh, yeah, we might get a Super Bowl rematch. I'm like, no, you won't.
No.
you will not.
And there's an interesting thing. I know I talked to someone about why there's only three games. Obviously, someone had also said, too, with the World Cup, people might be sported out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the reason they've given it, isn't it, is because Tottenham's a new venue. They want to kind of see, like, the logistics of it. Twickenham was just an absolute nightmare, and there's no way the NFL were going to go back there. So they had the two games at Wembley, one for Tottenham. Maybe a lot of people are reading a bit too much into it, maybe thinking, oh, it is a step back and all of that. But as far as I'm aware, and, you know, from that trusted source, it is Mr. Neil Reynolds, you know, they are going to go back to four or more in the future. I think the experiment this year, isn't it, is the fact that they're going to have, you know, three games on three consecutive weekends and just see how that works out.
Yeah.
So again, it's all about the NFL kind of tinkering until eventually we get the Jaguars over here in 2040.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen. But it'll be interesting, and it'll be a very busy month of October. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. This is another episode of Sports and the Stripes, and we will see you next week.